Today is Saturday, February 21st, 2009. This is LTUE, Current Trends in Science Fiction Fantasy.
That's complicated. That's much better, because I can't shout. Not well. I think this is complicated, though, by the fact that it's a lot more difficult to write a good short fantasy than it is to write a good short science fiction story. And that has always been the case. Probably because when you're doing fantasy, even in a short story, there's a certain amount of necessary world building, or at least world assumptions, that you've got to wrangle into it, because there's so many different places you can go with a fantasy. Whereas with science fiction, hopefully most of the readership knows the bottom line of, call it, basic science. These days I wonder about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. During the days when I was editing Bleeding Edge, which is, you know, little magazine, it's really more there to train us than it was to deal with the fiction. But we always had, I'd say about 50-50, but the fantasy submissions, people just struggled. They were really hard. If we could find a good fantasy short story, we always published it. Because there were always a couple science fiction that we didn't have room for that weren't quite good enough, but if we got a fantasy that was equal even to the bottom of the heap for the science fiction, we published it, because it's so much harder to do a fantasy, we couldn't find them.
When I was editing Writers of the Future, a few years back, I had the same problem. I couldn't get very many good fantasy stories, but one of the things I've noticed in the past year to year and a half with Writers of the Future is that we've had some excellent, excellent fantasy stories. And not just one here and there, but, you know, the last quarter that I judged had one science fiction story and maybe seven fantasy stories, and I'd say three of them were in the range of being brilliant, some of the best fantasy stories I'd ever read. So I think that what's happening is that a lot of people who want to break into the fantasy markets are facing so much resistance at the novel level that they're saying, okay, I'm going to go out and try to publish something in fantasy that's going to give me some attention.
Unfortunately, I think there's a downside to that particular issue, which is that more and more I've noticed, especially among young writers, there is a certain, should we say, weakness in the scientific background, which is much more widespread than it used to be. Consequently, a lot of the science fiction stories I've seen have got semi-fatal and fatal flaws in them, because people don't really understand the basic science. Now, science fiction's always had this particular problem, but it's usually been in other areas than science. Most science fiction stories, you really don't want to look at the economics. They don't usually work. And I'm speaking as somebody who's trained as an economist, so I sort of have this bias against that sort of thing. But it's true, nonetheless. And I think that's one of the things that contributes to perhaps the growth of the short fantasy novels as well, because I think a lot of the science fiction novels are weaker in terms of their structure and their understanding of science.
Well, let's just launch just right into it. Let's go into science fiction trends. Let's look at that genre. If science fiction is making a slight resurgence, what are you seeing a lot of? What are the editors talking about? What are good science fiction stories right now? Okay. Let's go. Eric, do you want to go with this? Can you handle it, or do you want me to? Okay.
Right now, it seems there's quite a bit of looking at post-singularity science fiction. For those of you who don't know what the singularity is, the basic concept is that technological change keeps happening faster and faster. We're getting more and more advanced. And at some point, we're going to create technologies so advanced, and, you know, and artificial intelligences and things like that, that essentially there's no way for us to predict what will happen in scientific development after that. Because our brains aren't, you know, bright enough to comprehend what's going to happen. And so it does kind of open up a whole world of possibilities that nobody can say you're really all that wrong, because who knows what's going to happen after the singularity? That's the whole point. Nobody knows. I think that's one reason why people are trending toward that, because it opens up a whole range of possibilities. Another trend I've noticed that seems to be beginning is the fantasy that's really science fiction. James Maxey's dragon novels are set on a post-apocalyptic Earth where dragons are genetically engineered creatures that have taken over the world because they kind of won the war against the humans. And Ken Scholl's Lamentation series they're calling it kind of a science fantasy because it's in our future, and the magic is there, but it may be technologically based. And so that's something that seems to be an emerging trend, I'd say.
Can anyone here talk about slipstream? Because I don't think I can.
I don't know how much, but I've written a bunch of stuff that everybody says is slipstream, so we'll take a shot at it. But before we take a shot at that, I want to hit the post-singularity garbage. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that's post-singularity is really what Brandon and Eric referred to in the sense of science fantasy. It opens the possibilities, but it also excuses some fairly weak science. And I'm going to give you a couple of analogies to point out one of the fallacies with this approach, because those of you who are writers should know about it, and those of you who are readers probably won't hurt to know about it. Certain aspects of technology, and this has been said before, but I think I can back it up, we have reached practical limits on. And everybody hates to say that, but on our planet, we have basically near instantaneous communications. There's maybe a 1 second delay if satellites or what have you, but it's basically near instantaneous. We don't process things faster than near instantaneous, and it wouldn't matter if you had a whole computer chip in your head. You're still not going to be able to physically react much faster than instantaneously. That is a limit. If you look at transportation, at the time of Columbus, it took, 8 weeks to cross the ocean. By the middle of the last century, we were down to five days. Before they retired the Concorde, you could go up to 4 hours. Well, there's a tremendous difference between 8 weeks and 4 hours. There's not that much of a difference between, shall we say, 4 hours and 10 minutes in terms of the way it affects society. So a lot of the things that you're talking about with the, quote, post-singularity simply aren't going to happen because there are literally physical limits there that you can't engineer people beyond. You can't think faster than instantaneously. Yes, you can probably compress 30 seconds worth of thought, if you've got a computer-aided brain, into a couple of nanoseconds, but your body's not going to react much faster than that. Consequently, I have great doubts about this singularity trend continuing for terribly long. It becomes almost technological wish fulfillment, of which, since we're talking trends, there is a great deal of at this point. Now, let's go back to slipstream, now that I've gotten off that soapbox. Slipstream, theoretically, for those of you who don't follow it, is literally the fusion of different genres. And I've done it, for example, I have the Alternate World, the Ghost series, which is basically an alternate world science fiction, which has a scientific rationale for ghosts, and all of the stories are murder mystery thrillers. That is probably as good a definition of slipstream as any out there. But there are slipstream romances with a couple of science fiction. There are slipstream romances with fantasy and romance and what have you. Basically, what we're talking about is a fusion of multiple genres. And it is a growing thing, although an awful lot of what would have been called slipstream, say, 2 or 3 years ago, is just simply being marketed as, should we say, romance with a twist or science fiction with a twist.
And they're all developing kind of their own subgenres. Nowadays, from what I've heard, slipstream has to kind of have that hard literary edge, which it didn't used to. It's kind of genre fusion in a postmodern sort of literary way is where it's going right now. A lot of these, we'll talk about this in fantasy because I'm more familiar with the fantasy ones than the science fiction. But there's a bunch of fantasy slipstream which has become mainstream, which has become some of the big genres. Naomi Novik's a great example of this. The fusion of historical and fantasy. Before that it was Jonathan Strange. Things like this are defining a new subgenre in fantasy. Let's keep going on science fiction for a little bit longer. Lee mentioned something several times that I think is good to pay attention to. And that is, there has been kind of a downswing in hard science fiction and an upswing in space opera. And an upswing specifically in space opera that pretends it's hard science fiction. And that's not to say that there isn't hard science fiction out there or that they aren't looking for it. The thing about hard science fiction I notice is a lot of the editors I talk to in New York grew up in a different era from the fantasy kids like me, who grew up reading fantasy during this fantasy boom in the 80s and 90s. The editors tend to be a generation older and love the classic science fiction and are actively searching for it, but my generation is not very good at producing it. Which means that if you are one who is a fan of the classic science fiction and can produce it, there is a market there for you simply because the editors like it a lot. Hartwell is an excellent example. Hartwell does publish fantasy, does like fantasy, but the fantasy publishes tends to be a little more scientific. And he always laments that there isn't enough good science fiction. And when he says that, he means hard science fiction, usually.
The problem with trying to write hard science fiction is that the audience just isn't there. I mean, if I were to write hard science fiction that was, say, taking a biological edge, I have a brother-in-law who is one of the heads of the Human Genome Project, okay? And he often laments that there's really no good genetic engineering stories out there. Well, there's lots of genetic engineering stories, but they're written by people who don't understand it, for people who don't understand genetic engineering. And, you know, he's fluent in 12 different languages. He made up his own little keyboard so that, you know, if he needs to insert Chinese characters into it or Russian characters into his notes and stuff like that, he can just do it all on the fly. So trying to write a story that will appeal to him, you know, I've got about 20 people in the country who'd understand it, you know. There's just no audience for that. And that's the same in any other science. If I want to get into astrophysics, if I want to get into, just any of the subgenres of hard science fiction, you're just limiting your audience. So we have a lot of science fiction which is really kind of dumbed down. Hence, I think that's the big reason why people are turning back to doing the space opera.
This brings up another trend which goes across probably all of the genres we've talked about, and that is that there's much more of an emphasis, from what I'm seeing at least, on action. Whether it's in fantasy, whether it's in science fiction, or what have you, there is what I would call almost the living blood on the page trend among an awful lot of letter editors. It might be in romance. How much sex and sexual attraction we can... Well, if it's romance, there won't be sex. It will just be implied sex. But how much implied sex we can get into how many pages. If it's science fiction, it's how many nifty gadgets can we get into that do great things. If it's fantasy, it's how much magic, how nifty is the magic system. There, and I think, frankly, this is one of the reasons why there is a growing... I would refer this as mainly an American phenomenon. And I think that's one of the reasons why there has been more of a British invasion of this genre, because the Brits tend to do character, frankly, a little bit better.
Eric, you got anything on this? On this side of the table? Okay. One thing I'll mention just as a side note to what Dave said, there is one genre of hard science fiction which still has a large audience and still does well, and that is computer hard science fiction, which the old guard doesn't really consider hard science fiction, but when you're doing Neal Stephenson style, because there are so many computer engineers out there, if you've got your science down, and this is the kind of new wave, the next step on cyberpunk sort of things like Snow Crash, which is now an old book, but things like this, I think, are still... People said cyberpunk is dead, and cyberpunk is kind of dead, but post-cyberpunk is alive and well because of how many computer engineers there are out there. So I think that that's still a genre you can look at. But generally, the space opera that masquerades as hard science fiction, and I say that with a loving heart because I like those genres, but if we're looking at Lois Bujold, that's kind of what she does generally. I would say John Scalzi's a really good example. He's the science is not so hard that an average audience can't pick it up and enjoy it. And that's always been the argument against hard science fiction, is that you have to have a PhD to understand it. So one thing to also mention in this is military science fiction never felt the science fiction plunge. It's the one genre that seems completely immune to any sort of science fiction depression, continues at a strong, steady pace, and will probably continue.
Speaking as an ex-military type who does write military science fiction, the only problem with this is an awful lot of the military science fiction in terms of the military aspects is getting worse and worse. Anybody who's been in the military will find in a great deal of this that the character interrelations in the military culture is often not very well understood. I see a few nods, obviously ex-military people there in the audience. I'd like to throw something in. We're talking about trends in science fiction. And this is something that's come up, and it's a trend of a different sort. All of the science fiction magazine print magazines have either suffered a decline in subscriptions and in sales, or literally gone out of business. It was mentioned earlier, for example, Realms of Fantasy just decided that they were going to fold up shop. The magazine of Science Fiction and Fantasy, edited by Gordon Van Gelder, has decided that in April they will go to a bi-monthly format. What is happening is, and this is a trend in the small fiction market and the short fiction market, is there's much less print science fiction out there in that sense. There are probably more venues, but they're fragmented. They're going to online magazines, they're going to various small, much smaller formats. And this is a very much, I would say, a trend that I suspect is going to continue. If you look at collections, which are short fiction by single authors, Locust issued a list of recommended short fiction collections this past year. I noticed one thing about it which was absolutely amazing. Not a single collection of the ones they recommended was published by a large publisher. Even though many of the authors are big-name authors who have their novels published by large magazines. I did have a collection published last year. I think probably Cage Baker and I were the only two that I can think of who were fairly well-known authors who actually had a collection published by a well-known publisher. And I frankly think that Tor is probably going to lose money on my collection. I won't speak about Cage, but short fiction, in terms of the collective variety and in terms of the, call it the pay for it, is very much in a perilous state at this particular point. That's a continuing trend.
One place where short fiction does seem to be on the upswing is in audio. With the advent of podcasting and cheap audio reproduction, a lot of sites like Escape Pod, Podcastle, and things like that are providing a venue for audio science fiction. Mostly it's reprints, you know, audio, I call it a reprint in audio. But it does seem to be a vastly growing market right now because of iPods and people being able to listen to the audio.
The problem from the writer's point of view is, though, that it's not necessarily a market in the sense that it becomes harder and harder for somebody who is essentially a story writer to make money out of this. And I think maybe you want to talk to this, Eric.
Yeah, making money writing short stories ain't what it used to be. You read about writers back in the 20s and 30s who could essentially make a living writing short fiction. I'm writing short fiction and I'm not making a living at it. If you want to make money at it, essentially you have to write novels.
I just wanted to add a number to give perspective to this. When F. Scott Fitzgerald was writing short fiction for the Saturday Evening Post in the 20s, he got $4,000 a story. At that time, the salary of a U.S. congressman was $5,000 a year. That will give you some indication of how far the state of short fiction being paid for is on. Howard, you have been hammered.
I just wanted to point out that the trend in science fiction, short fiction periodicals declining, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that trend continuing, because we are seeing declines in periodicals everywhere. So the news media is struggling with going out of business. Newspaper subscriptions are way down. I mean, nobody under the age of 25 subscribes to a newspaper. This trend is happening across the periodical industry, and science fiction and fantasy short fiction authors are just one tiny set of casualties. And maybe you guys can, we can all be smart enough to come up with a new market for some of that stuff.
Well, there are new markets emerging, in that we have the ebook market is taking off and will continue to take off in the next few years. I think that that's going to give us the opportunity to market our stories, but I don't know how effectively we're going to be able to market them yet. Anybody who comes to my website will be able to buy my stories. I suppose if they start searching, looking for my short story specifically, but the value of being in a magazine like Asimov's was that you had a readership that liked science fiction or liked fantasy or whatever genre you're in, and they're going to see the best of the best out there, and if you could get into that magazine, all of a sudden, you had some eyes looking at your work. And that's not true anymore. The value of me writing a science fiction story or a fantasy story to get recognition in major magazines is greatly diminished. I mean, when I started out, I believe Asimov's had a circulation of around 150,000. Analog was running about 450,000. Omni was selling 2 million copies a month. Omni's out of business. Analog, I think, is down to about 120,000. Asimov's and these guys are down to something like 17 to 25,000. That's really small potatoes, quite frankly.
Analog's down to about 29,000.
Yeah, that whole thing Lee said about $4,000. You're lucky to get $4,000 for a short story today. Very lucky. That's high pay. Normally you're looking at the $500 range, the $1,000 range, things like that.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I decided that I wanted to make $12,000 writing short fiction. And I figured that I would have to write, and publish maybe 24 stories. And I actually wrote and published 10 stories, and I made my $12,000, for the year after only 10 short stories. But I couldn't do that today. If I were to try to make $10,000, I'd have to go out and do probably 20 short stories as a minimum.
If you can find enough places to take them. And yeah, to publish 20 short stories, they'd have to be like one in Asimov's and one in Analog every month. But we need to move on. We need to move on to fantasy because we're about halfway through our time. So let's talk about fantasy trends. We've already mentioned, The historical fantasy crossover genre, the slipstream stuff. There was a big boom in the paranormal romance and the fantasy romance crossovers. Are these still big? Have they declined? Will they continue to be big? What do you guys think?
They're still big. Yeah, the paranormal romances and this type of thing are really doing well. But I think that the big trend is that if you go to the fantasy sections nowadays, you're going to see that there's a lot of young adult in the adult fantasy section and a lot of adult fantasy section that's now crossing over into the young adult markets. And so that, to me, is really the big interesting the way things are going.
I think there's, although it hasn't emerged yet, there's definitely a trend away from from the big high fantasy series. The series, the fantasy series that are going on are continuing are those that tend to have twists, whether they're Twilight and the vampires and what have you, whether they're like Brandon's series with his metallurgical magic, I guess you'd call it, or whether you're like mine, which are often been described as science fiction cloaked in fantasy. But I think most, you're seeing a trend away from orcs, elves, dwarves, dragons, and what have you. It'll be a little while before that plays out, because readers are very loyal to a given series, and what will happen there is, when that series dies, that author will probably have a great deal of difficulty, or when it's finished, doing the same thing again. So it will be sort of a trailing off thing, at least that's what I see.
I agree 100%. In fact, I think this started in the mid-90s. The last great big quest fantasy that got huge was Terry Goodkind. And that was during the late 90s, early 2000s, there were a number of high-profile flops where people tried to launch this again. We've seen it all through the 2000s. Some publishers trying to play catch-up where they don't quite understand where it's going. During the late 90s, early 2000s, and still continue today, we have the George R. R. Martin effect, I think, still affecting fantasy. This is the heroic fantasy, meaning the not high magic fantasy, gritty fantasy, this sort of thing, which I see partially as a reaction against the young adult invasion. The young adult invasion is still going on. I'm not sure if the boom has now kind of popped following Harry Potter, but yeah.
My agent called me up in August and said, "Dave, I want you to do a big high fantasy, or not high fantasy, a big young adult fantasy." And he said, "You know, I'm getting all these requests from editors and whatnot." And so I said, "Okay, I'll put together a package for you." I put together a package, got it to him in September. He read it in, about the 1st of November and got back to me. And he said, "I can't sell young adult fantasy now." He says, every editor that I've talked to says, we're way overbought. We're sitting here kicking ourselves saying, why did we do this? We're not going to get rid of this fantasy stock for, 3 years. So this is a case of, don't blink or you're going to miss the wave. Well, the wave has crested and it's now gone, that's according to my agent.
Yeah, as someone who's been looking for an agent using a high fantasy, I've gotten a lot of comments from agents saying that essentially epic, big epic fantasy isn't really selling right now, and so they cut back on getting new authors with that.
The thing about it is that I look at is, the way that I see it is this, okay? High fantasy, according to some of the experts, is dead. Well, vampire stories were dead a few years ago. Back when Treasure Island was written, pirate stories were dead, These things come back, and it will come back. And it will come back in a new and different form, maybe. We're not going to, orcs done exactly the way orcs were done 20 years ago, but somebody will come in and say, I'm going to do a new orc story, and I'm going to do some fusion, between science fiction and fantasy and literary mainstream, and I'm going to have the most literary orcs that you've ever, orcs reading Hamlet, and somebody's going to do something that's going to click. People are going to say, wow, this is really cool, and it'll happen again. So I think, for me, I just write what I want to write.
I think Dave's last words have a great deal of very common sense wisdom in them. One of the problems that people have when you talk about trends is the trends often refer to the hangers-on as opposed to the innovators. Basically, the Terry Goodkind makes it big, and everybody wants to write really sexually edgy, gritty, hard fantasy of a heroic sort of seminal. I don't know what you call his heroic, but anyway, of that nature. You get Tolkien, and everybody wanted to write about orcs and dwarves and what have you. If you as an author can write
what they haven't thought about yet in a way that's really intriguing, that's really where you want to be. Because trying, as I've often told young writers, copying anything, even if you are the best copyist in the world, only gives you something as good as the original because you're always doing a copy. And trends reflect all too often the problem of second-rate editors. The difference between a good editor and a second-rate editor is a second-rate editor can tell you what's selling. A second-rate editor can tell you what's sold. Only a good editor can tell you what will sell that hasn't sold.
Has fantasy hit its stride yet? Everyone talks about the Golden Age and the Silver Age of science fiction. Have we hit it for fantasy? Did it pass, or is it yet to come?
Oh my gosh. You know, you look at J.K. Rowling, and here we have somebody whose books are among the best-selling books of all time in the world. And I mean, we're talking, she's got, you know, half a dozen books that are in the top 20 of the best, I mean, up there with Tale of Two Cities, you know. Kind of sales figures. And then you got Stephanie Meyer, who last year beat J.K. Rowling in her total number of sales in any given year. And so we're seeing fantasy there. I think that fantasy is in the midst of a huge surge, which is, quite frankly, unlike anything that we've ever seen in fiction in the past, you know, couple hundred years. And I don't think that it's done yet. It's got a ways to go. That's just my opinion. I think that the kids who are picking this stuff up now, you know, you're seeing what we call the halo effect, in that you talk to book reps and say, what's selling? And they say, anything like Stephanie Meyer, okay? And that includes some truly atrocious material. It's so sexually explicit that I'd take a belt to my daughter if I caught her reading it. It's
which book?
It's still going to be coming. It's going to be here for a few years.
There's another effect. This is going to make me very unpopular, but it goes with this. If you look at science fiction, it does have rules. I mean, basically, you can only do so much with science. The thing about fantasy is that even if it's logical, you can really do anything that you want. And I think part of the surge in fantasy is a reaction to a generation which is chafing at what I would call the limits of reality, both in terms of what they see culturally and politically. And just like we have seen a financial meltdown because of the financial types we're chafing at, we call it the limits of reality, I think in time we may see the same thing happen with fantasy, but I think Dave's right. It's not going to be for a while yet.
Though there is still to mention that kind of counterculture led by Martin, and we saw Joe Abercrombie the last couple of years doing very well with it. Some people like, what's his name? Red Seas Under Red Skies, Locke Lamora, yeah. Scott Lynch. We've seen an R. Scott Baker and things like this. We've seen a real big surge toward the gritty, realistic fantasy without a lot of magic going on. I think as a sort of counterculture to the big epics, there is the big epics. There's really only one left, and that's Wheel of Time. I would say. Yeah, it is called Conflict of Interest. The biggest fantasy books of the last few years have been George R. Martin, who, you know, dabbles in epic, but really is solidly in this heroic genre. We've had Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss, which is a heroic story. It also kind of slips streams into epic a little bit, but mostly it's a heroic fantasy about one individual telling his story of heroism. We've seen the Naomi Novik and Jonathan Strange sort of stories, the historical, this world, alternate, this earth. So it's like alternate history, but with fantasy instead of science fiction. What else have we seen that's been really big? Anyone?
There's some good high middle of the road, but I think you've got them.
Guggenheim's done, though. Guggenheim moved to Main Street.
Yes, he did. I was never a big fan of Terry Guggenheim, as I have to say. Stylistically, I think he was a pretty good writer. But in terms of what he did, it just didn't fit my sensibilities, if you will. I don't know how to phrase this. That's why I'm sort of looking bewildered. But I think there are trends and there are trends. And there is, shall we say, the big splash trend, like Stephanie Meyer, like even J.K. Rowling. And then there is the what I would call the slow and steady trend that's always been there, that sort of scoots along enough to make the author very comfortable and stays around forever. In science fiction, probably one of those was Marion Zimmer Bradley. There are probably 20-some Darkover novels. They all sold fairly well. I don't think any of them ever made, of the Darkover novels, made the bestseller list, although the her Arthurian thing, what's the...
Mists of Avalon.
Mists of Avalon still occasionally pops up on the trade paperback bestseller lists. I have to give an analogy because I can't think of one offhand in science fiction, but if you look at, say, Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, that's one of the top books all-time best-selling. The New York Times has agreed not to put it on its list because it's what's called an evergreen. It keeps selling. But it's close to 30 million copies. Would that some of us had books that were 30 million copies. But this is a different, call it, under the trend thing. And I don't know how you discuss it in terms of trends, but there is a factor. There are people out there who successfully buck this trend for years and years and are quite successful.
I think in that case it comes down to just high quality writing. High quality writing that is going against the trend will find an audience and will continue despite the fact, if it's really high quality writing, I think it will make a new trend. Or if it's really high-quality writing that intersects with an audience that really wants to read it. But if you write really well, you will continue to sell. We'll do Dave, and then we'll go to that. Back.
Yeah, I think it's more than high-quality writing, because I think there's some high-quality writing that the publishers just throw out, not recognizing that they've got a gem. I think that it also requires a publisher who has a continued... desire and interest to keep the book out there and to go out and do reprints and things like that.
Kathleen?
I think you need to distinguish between high-quality writing and high-quality storytelling. And
okay,
storytelling trumps writing right down the line. Now, Stephanie Meyer is not a high-quality writer.
She's admitted that.
She is that you can't beat her storytelling. And that's where the draw is. If you can tell a great story, you can be a fairly adequate writer. You don't have to be great.
The only exception to that is the literary mainstreams. We're talking science fiction fantasy. So, all right, let's do questions. We got 5 minutes left. We'll go to the back and we'll hop up here.
Is there a clear trend towards young adult stuff, even among adults?
Young adult will always sell. It will continue to sell. I think the Harry Potter boom is over. That was just a blossoming of fantasy in young adult. I think young adult's numbers will always continue, will be strong. And there's been an upswing since they put young adult in its own section in the bookstores, which was a big boon for everyone. But I think that there will continue to be and will always be a market there. That's my opinion. Okay. All the editors are asking for young adult science fiction, but they have been for about 2 years now, so it may be too late to chase that trend. They all felt that following Harry Potter, the next big things would be some big young adult science fictions. A lot of the agents were saying to their authors, give me some young adult science fictions. I've known a lot of authors that have turned them in. We'll probably see a big one in the next couple years.
Well, you have James Patterson's... Is the only science fiction story for young adults that I've seen that's really taken off very big lately. I mean, there's also the Scott Westerfield's Uglies series, which I think you could labels of science fiction. So there's a couple of them that have taken off, but I haven't seen people taking off in the same way as they've done in fantasy.
You mentioned the high fantasy and epic fantasy seeming to have some troubles now. What about epic fantasy for adults that's, say, packaging covers? Is there still a market for that?
The question is there still a market for epic fantasy for adults packaged trilogies? Yes. The trend is on a downswing. It's not going to bottom out very lowly, I don't think. But it's harder to sell that right now. If you are looking, again, I say write the best thing you can. Don't worry, but if you're looking, they're generally wanting shorter. They're wanting pieces at 120,000 to 150,000 words. They've been saying that for years. They were saying that when I sold Elantris as a standalone at 250,000. Though they cut it, had me cut it to 200. Yeah, there is, that's on the downswing. I think it's a genre that will stick around.
In fact, what I've been hearing from agents is they're looking more 100 to 120 rather than 120 to 150 for epic fantasy. They really want to cut it down.
There's a very practical reason for this. Cost of paper has skyrocketed again, and it's basically 45% of the price of any book. It's the single biggest factor in book production costs.
And shipping has gone up.
Well, now, shipping's another question. We're going to see a whole change in the wholesale market, and that's all of the sales that don't go to the chain bookstores. Madison News has attempted to put a 7-cent per paperback charge, which is huge. This is one of the reasons why Time has refused pay it. Anderson shut down its distribution network a week ago, and this is going to have a tremendous impact on the market, and it hasn't shaken out yet.
What sort of impact do you think it's going to have?
Well, Anderson was losing money, and they control 40% of all the wholesale distribution. The magazines say they can't pay the surcharge. Anderson says they can't operate without the surcharge. Something's got to give. And I don't know enough about the internal economics of either organization to say that. But what it boils down to is the costs are going to go up, and the costs going up means that the distribution is going to go down.
Mm-hmm. All right, right back here, and then we'll come up in front.
I came a bit late, so I don't know if this got covered earlier, but does anybody have any opinion about the overall health or future prospects for, like, military, SF, or...
We barely mentioned it. I touched on it. Lee touched on it. We'll let Dave go.
Yeah, there's a good market for it. It's still healthy. It's not a huge market. I mean, you're typically not going to go out and, you know, start getting $100,000 advances for military SF, but there's an awful lot of people who read it, and we've got a huge military infrastructure. As long as we've got soldiers and people who like to read military, it's going to be there.
It's very hard to publish and to get recognition unless you're in the military. Great short example here was Elizabeth Moon. Her military science fiction was selling terribly until they put on the back of her books that she was ex-Marine, and then they took off. You got to get past that barrier. But there are a number, Dave Drake, John Ringo, David Weber, there are a number of really solid bestsellers. They're not hitting the number one bestsellers, but they're solid, they're selling really well, and I think there will continue to be a market there.
And as someone who worked, you know, for years as a contest judge with Writers of the Future and whatnot, if you want to write military science fiction, go join the military first, okay? That's my piece of advice.
All right, right here, and then we'll see if we have time.
You look at me.
The Kindle. Questions about the Kindle. The Kindle has not become the iPod of e-readers, but it's become the best attempt at doing that. It has actually impacted the market, which none of the ones before have. Between the Kindle and the Sony e-reader, people are now really starting to talk about it. A lot of authors and agents are a little bit panicking because the contracts are not quite... I mean, the Kindle is selling books at $10, which... By most authors' contracts, dumps that into deep discount, and so the authors are making a fraction of what they would normally make on that book. So instead of getting $4, you're getting 40 cents, which is thrown, you know, right now, my last royalty statement, I sold 9 Kindle books. That's not very many, I'll just tell you that. Of all the thousands of books I sold 9 copies on the Kindle. But there's been enough of a wave in certain genres, the science fictions, particularly the computer-oriented science fiction, things like this, they're starting to really make a dent, and so everyone's scrambling to figure out what they'll do with it. We're not sure yet what will happen. It's all been tossed up in the air, and I'll see if anyone... This is a good question to end on. So why don't we do this? If you want to address this one, address it, and then also give any final closing remarks you want, including plugs if you've got a signing or a reading, and then we'll close, all right? So we'll start with Lee.
I think we're going to see an upswing in all of the electronic books, and I think the distribution is going to be a thing. I think it's going to be a lot slower than anybody thought. But, for example, just 2 days ago, Amazon introduced the Kindle 2, which they promise is lighter, holds more, will work better. We'll have to see about that. I don't have much in the way of closing comments. I do have a signing at noon in the BYU bookstore downstairs.
Yeah, I think that he said it as far as the as this goes. For my closing comments, I do have a little column that I send out each day, almost every day, called David Farland's Kick in the Pants. If anyone can like it, there's a sign-up sheet. Just give me your email address and you can get it. I also have some writing workshops in April, so I've got some flyers for those if you're interested.
Since we're doing PR, I do have a website. It's LEModestyJr.com.
A remark on the Kindle 2, there's a big hubbub going on because it reads your books to you. It's got an audio reader, which is suddenly freaking everyone out because audiobooks are on the rise. And now you can get your Kindle, push a button, and it will play the book for you. Not very well, but in a monotone voice, but it's better than previous ones. And there's this worry about that. But that's a whole a different panel entirely. I also will be doing a signing. I think Dave's going to be there, too, at the noon. There are two big signing times today. I'm at the, noon and 2 o'clock. I'm at the noon one. And BrandonSanderson.com. And we'll let Eric send us out.
I basically agree that, long-term e-readers are going to take over, but I think it's going to take a lot longer than a lot of people think. I think we're at least 10 years away from it becoming the mass implementation.
20.
And 20, I think it replaces the mass market paperback. But I have a signing at 2, and I have a reading at 6.
Thanks for coming.